Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Western elites and their pliant media have made it clear the Ukraine proxy war is all about weakening and eventually destroying Russia's military capacities. This is why there is no good faith appeals about a negotiated end to the conflict. They have chosen another forever war. Crosstalking NATO's choice, I'm joined by my guest, Matthew Arendt in Montreal. He's a senior fellow at the American University of Moscow, as well as director of the Rising Tide Foundation of Canada. In France, we have Thierry Laurent Palais. He is a geopolitical analyst, as well as author of the upcoming book, Ukraine, the Spy Entrepreneur. And here in Moscow, we cross to Wyatt Reed. He is a managing editor at The Gray Zone. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect, gentlemen, and I always appreciate you jumping in. Matthew, let me go to you first here. We have a lot of news coming out right now, and it covers a wide array of things. First of all, we have NATO General Secretary Stoltenberg warning everyone this is going to be a long war. So NATO's decided it wants to be in a long war. It has foreclosed negotiations. Just in the last news cycle, we have Bloomberg reporting headline, U.S. and G7 allies expect the conflict in Ukraine to drag on for years. So, Matt, this is a choice. This is a choice on their part, isn't it?
Yes, none of this needs to happen. This could be resolved as Lavrov himself had made a point in his remarks. This could be resolved in a split second. Even Donald Trump has made the point how easy this would be to simply resolve by changing the edict that Zelensky had put forth, saying that there would be no negotiations possible or even legal with Putin. And it seems as though, even though there are nice flowery words saying we want a speedy end to this, regardless of the amount of manpower, the human life that's being destroyed, you have these insane remarks by Stoltenberg saying this will go on for another decade. So it does seem to be that they don't want it to end, that there are conscious efforts to continuously pour diesel on the fuel, on the fires right now, and there's no end in sight as long as this ideology continues to dominate the transatlantic.
Okay, well, Wyatt, you know, you're from the United States. We have Teddy, he's in France. We have Matthew, he's in Canada. So all of you guys have been participating in some kind of election about continuing the war in Ukraine, right? I mean, where's the people's choice here? We have the elite choice. This is an elite conflict. It has been from day one an elite conflict. But nobody among the populace, the citizenry, votes on these things. Why, Wyatt?
Well, that's right. And, you know, if we had had some kind of election about this early on in the past year or so, year and a half, I think there is a significant chance that endless weapons to Zelensky might have prevailed. But for the first time now, we have polls coming out from CNN and others that show a majority of Americans are opposed to this endless supply of military hardware to the most corrupt regime in Europe. This is not something that is popular in amongst either side, it's beginning to seem. We have, just earlier this week, a report came out from National Public Radio, hardly Breitbart News, hardly Tucker Carlson. They said Biden's plan to send more aid to Ukraine is criticized by voters in Wisconsin. And they spoke about liberal and conservative voters opposing this plan that Biden has cooked up to send another $24 billion to Ukraine. So I think we're starting to see a significant shift in the United States, which makes it increasingly untenable for elected officials to just pour fuel on the fire, as the previous guest put it.
Well, Teddy, we also have in the news, remarkably, it's interesting how Poland has kind of reversed itself. No more arms for Ukraine. I mean, you know, 15 seconds ago, they were the biggest supporters of this conflict here. Now it's beginning to erode domestic politics in Europe. It doesn't bode well for the Zelensky regime and all of his backers. Go ahead, Teddy.
I would like to quote what happened to me end of June. I was invited at the Academy of Foreign Affairs in Vienna, and I attended a meeting with the ambassadors to Russia. And what I have been hearing from this gentleman is that Russia will be losing the war, there will be a NATO flag and a European flag flying over Kyiv in about 6 months. I heard also the number two of the central bank saying that the Russian economy was completely collapsing, that everything was a disaster and so on. And at a point in time, they have been giving me the opportunity, in fact, to talk about my own experience. So basically, if those guys, they want to go to war to the end, first of all, they need to tweak their economy. Because what I have been observing for the moment is that, one, we have a lack of supply in energy. The energy price has been climbing, skyrocketing to a point that nobody can afford, in fact, to drive a car in Europe. The industrial index has been collapsing completely. If we are looking at the Germany index, it is at 42. The one in Austria is at 39, in France, 46. And I see, in fact, the SME of Russia at 56. So what does it mean? It means that, one, Russia has the third strongest production today in the world, and everybody is collapsing in Europe in a recession mode. We are also...
Teddy, let me jump in here because your frame is shaking a little bit here. Let me go to Matthew right now. But Matthew, I mean, and given all of the statements that we've been coming out of Western capitals, you know, as long as it takes all the time here, that also tells us that they're not interested in peace. See, Ukraine seems to be irrelevant to this entire conversation. If they wanted peace, they could easily get it. I don't know about Trump's 24-hour plan, but along the lines of, well, you stop funding this ridiculous war and it will come to an end. Matthew.
Yeah, it's not a great magical secret how this would work. I think that part of this is that those who are planning this thing are really stuck on the and still drunk on the success of Zbigniew Brzezinski's great victory by you know, sucking the Soviets back into their unwinnable quagmire in Afghanistan back in the 80s. And there's just this strange effort to just replicate this template in our modern era, despite the fact that the world has changed very much since 1980s and 79, when the U.S. really was the dominant superpower economically. And on other points, today the world is completely different. We have the Russia-China-Iran alliance that's won over many of the countries of the world to a new set of rules of the game. And the formulas of the past don't work anymore, but there's just this unwillingness to recognize this reality.
But Matthew, don't you think that's what makes the West, particularly the United States, really, really dangerous? Let me go to Wyatt on that here. Because this is a paradigm shift. We've seen how the global South is reacting to all of this. But these people in Washington, they are so ideologically driven. What they want to do is they want to defeat Russia. Lloyd Austin said that in the very, very beginning, okay? And what it is doing is it is eroding their own power back home. Wyatt.
Absolutely. They hoped to degrade Russia militarily to the point where it could not do such things again, I believe was Lloyd Austin's exact phrasing. They wanted to turn the ruble the Russian ruble into rubble. And what did they get instead? Well, now they have NATO being demilitarized by force, sending all of its excess armaments to be destroyed by the Russian military. And they've also shot themselves in the foot economically and forced this transition in the rest of the world to the new sort of BRICS-led order that is, according to most of the countries joining it, enables them to have real self-determination in a way where they're not having to be forced to take loans by these international loan sharks like the IMF and the World Bank that dictate economic terms that force privatization onto people who don't want them. So, you know, in that sense, this has been a massive self-inflicted injury.
You know, Teddy, there was a phrase at the end of the 19th, early 20th century, it was called the sick man of Europe. Now, of course, that was the Ottoman Empire. But now we see the term resurrected, and it's being applied to Germany for good reason. Go ahead, Teddy.
Well, I have been putting the hands on a document that was emitted by RAND. And this is journalists from Sweden that has been giving me this this document. It was describing the way that Americans DOD would be destroying completely the German economy. You know that there is a huge effort that has been put it together between Germany, Russia, and China to build the Belt and Road Initiative. This backbone to shift merchandise from China to Europe was absolutely essential to our economy. And as it was shadowing, in fact, the economical capacity of the U.S. have been destroying, in fact, the pipeline, which makes the economy of Germany completely collapsing. And in this document, it was stipulating clearly that, in fact, the Americans wanted to shift all the energy-consuming industry close by USA, in fact, to get the assets built for very cheap. But this has a social consequences that are really serious, because if the jobs are shift because the company are moving away, that means that politically speaking, this is going to be a very serious problem for Scholz. And actually, when Scholz is heading within meeting, political meetings right now in Europe, everybody is booing him in the street.
Well, Teddy, I saw on Twitter a very interesting picture when the chancellor, I call him Sergeant Scholz, was addressing the United Nations General Assembly. Nobody was there listening. Nobody wants to hear what the German chancellor has to say. And you know what? Maybe they still had the pipeline. People would be willing to listen. But they don't have the pipeline. It's gone. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on NATO's choice. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing NATO's choice. Okay, let's go back to Matthew in Montreal. Okay, we've heard all the speeches from Zelensky and from all of his backers, particularly Joe Biden. This is all about democracy and territorial integrity and the children, of course. They always mention the children at the end of the sentence here. But what's really going on, the reason why they don't want to shut this down is because it's a huge money laundering operation, just like Afghanistan was. That's why there's so much hesitation. And what is really working in the to the advantage of the U.S. And its allies is that they have a willing participant. You know, what we have here is that Ukraine is not a victim. It's a volunteer. It's volunteering for this in its leadership. And that's what makes it so morally repugnant, okay, because they're in on the money laundering. Matthew.
Yeah, everyone's morally compromised who are playing this thing. Even the Pandora Papers Panama Papers back in the day demonstrated Zelensky was eyeballs deep in all sorts of shady business with offshore bank accounts in the Cayman Islands and Virgin Islands with tens of millions, if not more, dollars associated with him directly and his wife, but also all of the leading oligarchs of Ukraine, as well as the Biden crime family. And then you have the stories of Sam Brinkman-Fried. And that money laundering operation to feed back cash from the taxpayer straight into the Democratic Party vis-a-vis operations to donate to Ukraine. It's like everywhere you look, it's just pure corruption. And then you have the BlackRock, you know, World Economic Forum model going into full effect in Ukraine on every level. This is really just the densest form of corruption, I think, in the world on an official status, at least the part that people could see openly. And yet, despite that, they're still going for it, calling this thing a model of democracy when they canceled their elections. You know, Zelensky is
Matthew, we have to remember that Zelensky said, you know, if you give me $5 billion more, we might talk about it. You know, I mean, it's so brazen at this point here. Let me go to Wyatt. You know, the irony of it all is that, you know, they want Ukraine wants to be remade in the image of the West. But what's happening is that the West is becoming like Ukraine.
Absolutely. And it's increasingly unpopular. When we talk about this decision by the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, to no longer ship endless supply of weapons to Ukraine, that's being presented, obviously, as kind of a symptom of this grain dispute between Ukraine and Poland. But what's left unsaid is Poland has elections coming up.
Yep.
The incredible public support for Polish, Ukrainian refugees, that has slipped from the low 90s now to the 60%. And it's not just Poland. It's Slovakia. It's Austria. All these countries where elections are coming up. There is an increasing sense that if we continue forking over all of our assets to these Ukrainian refugees, many of whom do not even seem particularly grateful for it, if we keep forking over all of our assets to the Ukrainian military for it to just disappear down somebody's pocket, then we're going to eventually pay the price electorally.
Well, let's talk about politics. Teddy, we have already mentioned, you know, Poland and other Eastern European countries, and we do have elections coming up in a number of them, Poland, Austria, Slovakia. Do you think that's going, the Ukraine conflict is going to influence the elections there? Because we all know that Europe is terrified of populists. Go ahead, Teddy.
Well, I wouldn't say that this is the conflict itself that is going to trigger some major influence on the election, but more the consequences of the conflict. Look at what happens with France in Africa. Vladimir Putin has been helping the country, in fact, to distance themselves, the African countries, in fact, to distance themselves from France. And now we have Burkina Faso, we have the Mali, we have the Niger that has been breaking apart completely our relationship. And this is going to be a major hurdle for our economy because we are not going to get the gas and the oil at the price we used to get it, either the uranium. And the population in France start to suffer very seriously about the consequences. We have fresh product that has been increasing by 27%. We have the gasoline that has been increasing by 60%. People cannot afford, in fact, to eat properly right now. We have 30% of the population that is skipping meal every day. So therefore, that means that at the end of the story, somebody will have to be the scapegoat for this story. And Macron is really responsible for what is happening now.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Yeah, who's going to be held responsible? Well, I think we're going to be held responsible, okay, for showing the uncomfortable truths about this. We've been doing it from the very, very beginning. And Matthew, we're all lucky right now. It's Western media. It's okay now to talk about corruption in Ukraine. Remember, before the conflict, it was a corrupt country. And then only 15 minutes ago, we could talk about it again. Matthew.
Well, words are very, we take them for granted, what the power of telling the truth. And I mean, we see it on the one side where it's kind of like the child, the story of Hans Christian Andersen, where the child who was the first one to have the courage and the innocence, in a sense, to just say the truth that the emperor has no clothes in it. And then you couldn't put that genie back in the bottle. And I think you are sort of seeing some inklings of that, where we see the breakdown of Poland just simply saying, you know, openly and loudly that Ukraine is like a drowning man. The more you give, the more they're going to take, and they're still going to take you down with them. You've got some actual resistance, it seems, inside of the U.S. Congress as well towards this. And, you know, there's an open demand to actually see where the money is going. Why are we having no accountability, no oversight? But at the same time, there's, I think, a race over controlling the narrative. And we heard Jacinda Ardern, who's now all of a sudden somehow this major chief at Harvard in charge of basically planning out censorship for the new internet, saying that words are warfare, and how for every weapon of misinformation run by pro-Russian voices, we have new weapons to counteract that we're going to bring online, but we can't say what they are yet, but they're going to be important weapons. And you can only imagine the desperation to get control of this new reformed internet.
Yeah, but you've already given a discursive example of it. Let me go to Wyatt here. Being pro-Russian, now I'm pro-peace, okay? I'm pro-peace. Okay, and this is their Orwellian trick that they always play all the time. I want this war to come to an end now. It never should have started in the first place. Okay, and not being able to say peace, you know, that it has really doomed Ukraine and all of its people. Go ahead, Wyatt.
Well, as you pointed out correctly, now we are allowed to discuss the corruption. Thankfully, the very strange spokesperson, English-speaking spokesperson for the Ukrainian Territorial Defense Forces, was fired. But over the past week or so, it seemed that we were all being threatened with death for potentially being labeled, quote unquote, Russian propagandists, all fitting in with this new trend of basically openly threatening terrorism. Zelensky himself told The Economist recently that it would not be a, quote, good story for Europe if the West declines to continue sending endless weaponry to Ukraine, essentially threatening terrorist attacks. Now I feel a little bit safer. Obviously, no, you're right. We are not Russian propagandists. We are propagandists for peace. If we're going to be called anything kind of propagandist, I would say I had the same exact opinion all along. I want this to end yesterday. But unfortunately, there seems to be this segment of our ruling class in the West that is totally committed to keeping this thing going. And really, that's kind of Zelensky's main demographic at this point. If you have paid attention to the news these past few days, that was kind of one of the major meetings that flew under the radar, was Zelensky meeting with a host of CEOs and business power players at a meeting organized by J.P. Morgan. That came shortly after a meeting with the CEO of BlackRock, which is really going to be the main beneficiary in terms of the Ukraine, whatever remains of the Ukrainian rump state coming out of all this.
He wants to privatize the looting. It's extraordinary, okay? And you're right. It was a meeting that really went under the radar, but it was really significant. If you can't pump it out of the taxpayers, go private, okay? And then they can just take all the flesh off the bones of what's ever left here. Teddy, you live in France. What is public opinion? Is public opinion changing against it, against Macron, against NATO? You've already mentioned the events going on in North Africa. Is there a shift in mood? Go ahead, Teddy.
I have to say something. I do believe that now the public opinion start to be extremely angry in regard of the condition in which people have to live. And we have the left party that are raising the opinion, the public opinion, in fact, to retaliate against the government, okay? When I was coming back from Ukraine in February 2015, after the SBU has been arresting me, I had been sending a huge amount of emails to most of the leaders in France, like Bruno Le Maire, Gérard Larcher, Thierry Mariani, who has been welcoming me to the National Assembly. And I have been telling them that if they were not taking care of the shift to extremism that was happening in Ukraine, this country would be a major problem in the next 5 to 10 years. And this is what is happening. Actually, I was telling them it would be very, very easy, in fact, to stop the conflict that has been erupting in 2015 in Donbass, or to make sure that the settlement will be happening in the best condition for everybody. I told them, you go to Kyiv, you tell them, if you want to be in the European Union, you stop to massacre, in fact, the people in Donbass, or you will not get any dollar. I can guarantee you that Poroshenko or Zelensky would have been crawling on the ground.
Yeah, but you know, I'm sorry, Teddy. It's not about EU membership. It's not even about NATO expansion. It's about taking Russia off the geopolitical stage. That's what it's all about, okay? Matthew, 15 seconds before we go to end the program. Go ahead.
Agreed. Yes. This really has nothing to do with Ukraine. They're completely disposable. This has everything to do with who's going to be in a dominant position to shape the conditions of the emerging operating system that will replace the collapsing world order that is having the plug pulled from it. And that's where the race is at, whether it's going to be multipolar based upon open system cooperation or restoration of techno-feudalism and a depopulation agenda remains to be seen.
All right, everybody, what Matthew just said there, pull out a post-it, write it down, and put it in your wallet. Beautiful summation for the program here. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in France, Montreal, and here in Moscow. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.